Hey, in this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we've got Nux, we've got Mates, what to watch at MWC 2019, that's Mobile World Congress, don't you know, retro revivals, and much, much more next. Hey, and welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. There are only two of us today. We will try and multiply our brains a touch more, a fraction more for that half geek that may be dwelling within us. I'm usually the half geek, but today I am joined with one definite full geek, and that would be a guy by the name of Marco Cipetta. How are you this morning or this afternoon, my brother? It feels like morning still.
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. We have a nice, beautiful day here in Connecticut. Kids are playing in the other room. Got a little work done this morning, so no complaints over here.
No complaints. Well, I could complain. It's a little dreary over here in the Boston suburban area. And I'm hoping that sunshine comes this way. You send it on up from Connecticut, right?
You got it.
Please do. Yeah, yeah. And what's been happening in your world these days? Are you treading water or doing the breaststroke? What?
Oh, no. I am underneath the avalanche, but that's par for the course. It is what it is. It's all stuff I love and lots of stuff I can't talk about, but yeah, we have hardware in house and it is piled up on the desk.
Yeah. We've got a lot of stuff in house. There's lots of stuff leading up to Mobile World Congress, some of which we can talk about today and we will, some of which we're on NDA for, which we can't talk about, but, we'll try and keep it snappy. We're done with CES. We're rolling into Mobile World Congress, all things handset, mobile, 5G, all that good stuff. But there's still plenty going on in the PC space. And, there's never a dull moment, it seems. We don't get to catch our breath. That's just not part of the deal here. The beautiful thing about technology is it keeps evolving and keeps us in business, hopefully, but keeps us busy for sure. Marco has been playing, and we'll dive right in without too much pomp and circumstance. By the way, let me take a step back first before we dive in, because Marco's been playing with all kinds of fun stuff. We are going today on Friday at 2:30. That is going to change. This isn't a normal slot. We typically run Wednesdays. We're going to move to the Wednesdays at, did we say 9 o'clock, Marco? Was that agreed? I know John said it was a better slot for him. I think
I have no idea. I wasn't privy to your conversation with John, what's been approved, but I think we're going to try to go later. Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to try and go later, like 7 or 9 o'clock on Wednesday evenings. So that, more of you can join us from the East Coast, and West Coast. We think the 5:30 slot that we're typically in is a little bit on the early side for folks getting out of work. So EST, it's looking like 9 p.m., maybe 7 p.m. We'll let you know soon. Stay tuned. Hit subscribe. Hit the reminder bell, and you will get reminded. That's key. But thanks for joining us today, and let's dive in. Marco's been looking at the Intel NUC, the Bean Canyon NUC, from Intel. There it is, the next unit of computing, small form factor PC, now infused with 8th gen quad core Intel CPU goodness, along with Iris Plus graphics. Tell us all about this NUC, Marco.
So this
couldn't resist
this NUC there. Is what the NUC are you talking about over there? No, this NUC, this thing is awesome. So this is the guy that we looked at. Let me try to get a decent shot on the webcam here. Well, that's the side where the card reader is. That's the shot from the front, and that's the shot from the back. So you can see, roughly 4 inches square, nice small little tiny machine. This particular model is the NUC 8i7 BEH1. Now there's multiple Bean Canyon NUCs. There's NUC 8i5s based on the i5. There is a smaller version of the i7, which is basically the identical specs to this machine, identical motherboard actually, but it's a little shorter because it eliminates the 2.5 inch drive bay from the bottom. So it's actually got a lower Z height. But this guy that we looked at, this is the bare bones model. The bare bones machines, you need to supply your own memory, your own storage, and your own operating system. So keep that in mind if you're shopping for one of these little guys. There are models with memory and storage as well. There's lots of different stuff out there. But I love this bare bones one for a couple of reasons. First, I'm not going to say it's cheap, right? So it's $450 for this particular model. And I'm going to explain why that's not all that expensive by the time I get to the end of this conversation. So this model is a Core i7 859U-based machine with Intel Iris Plus Graphics 655. Now, what makes that sort of special for a machine this small is that's a true quad-core processor with support for 8 threads, turbos up to 4.5 gigahertz. And that Iris Plus graphics configuration has that additional 128 megs of embedded DRAM. So it's not quite a big giant frame buffer like a discrete graphics card, but it has this big memory cache for graphics and for the processor. It's essentially an L4 cache. So what that means is even for non-graphics workloads, you can have much more data closer to the processor. And that just means, you know, better cache hits and just a more responsive feeling system for some workloads. And that's sort of what struck me about this little machine. If you look at the benchmarks and you look at all of the numbers, this little guy is about as fast as, so it's kind of a cross between a Core i5 8400 and a Core i7 7700. So it's like a previous gen quad core Core i7, like sort of one of the newer i5s. But in this tiny 4-inch, basically square, with super low power, loaded up, the whole system is under 80 watts. It was like 77 watts. Mm-hmm. And it's just a super responsive, fast system. If you look at like PC Mark, for example, in the Essentials test, which is the least taxing of the tests, but because this guy has that 128 megs of eDRAM, it's so, you know, it's like a really large cache. And for just tooling around on the desktop and day-to-day stuff, it's just a super responsive, nice to use system. I really, really dug it.
So how big is this thing? It's unbelievably small. It's a couple of inches, right?
Yeah, 4.4 by 4.6 by 2 inches high. The motherboard is a basically a 4-inch square inside.
Nice, nice. And so this thing to me screams home theater PC. That's where I'd stick it. Where do you think this works other than the home theater setup? I mean, what sort of end user wants something this small? It's got a lot of horsepower, so it's can do a lot of things. Like, right?
It's way more powerful than what a home theater PC needs to be. It would be a great home theater, because you know it's just basically a high end Core i7 machine. I think. See, it's funny. You look at these little machines and you say, that can't be for everybody, right? And it's not for everybody because you do have to sacrifice expansion possibilities. You don't have as much I/O, although there is a fair amount of I/O on here, including, you know, Thunderbolt, multiple USB ports, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, wired gigabit LAN, you name it, it's on there. But, you know, if you know, like, this is probably the vast majority of users that everybody knows, right? They buy a PC. It's never touched by a screwdriver. It's never opened. It's plugged in. It sits on their desk until it's time to get a new PC. That kind of user, I think, would be shocked at how fast this little system is. And getting back to the price. So for $450 for bare bones, if you were to go price out a similarly performing Core i5, like a Core i5 8400 is a $300 chip. Then you need a motherboard. You need a case. You need a power supply. Okay. So yes, you can get those four things for less than $450, but not all that much less than $450. Mm-hmm. So with this little guy, you throw in, you know, $80 worth of RAM, 16 gigs of RAM. It goes up to DDR4 2400 officially. And it has an M.2 slot for storage. And this particular, the taller one, has a SATA slot too. So if you want to go with a small, really fast NVMe drive for the OS, and a more affordable, higher capacity 2.5-inch drive, I mean, that would serve a lot of people really well. And it's just super tiny. Comes with the VESA mount if you want to put it on the back of a monitor as well. So I don't know, man. I really like these machines for a wide range of users. I think you'd be surprised how many people would be satisfied with this, with a machine like this.
Yeah, so you've got gigabit Ethernet, so you can wire it in if you want to. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's got built-in 802.11ac Wi-Fi. It takes up to 32 gigs of RAM, so but it's dual channel. You've only got two SODIMs, right? So it's basically it's like a notebook setup with SODIMs. So, but 32 gigs of RAM. This thing could even be a little. I mean, if you wanted to, it's totally a media server. If you want to do something like that. And because you can put a SATA drive in there, and what can you get for, I'm trying to think what you can get for a highest density SATA drive these days. The M2 sticks go up to a terabyte or two. SATA drives go up to probably what, 4-8 terabyte in a standard 2.5 inch. I'm trying to think.
Yeah. I think 4 terabyte right now.
Yeah. You could get some serious media on this thing. Yeah, and also VESA mount, right? So this will go, you can clip this on the back of a monitor and have kind of like an all-in-one setup, right?
Yeah, you know, a really fast all-in-one. So a Core i7 7700,
right?
You know, a year and a half ago, people would drool over a system like that. And this thing's about that fast. Under sustained heavy workloads where every thread is getting hit, it's thermally constrained versus a full-size desktop. But most users aren't doing that. And for quick, bursty kind of desktop workloads, not only is it a really fast 8th-gen processor, but that extra ED RAM helps with responsiveness. Like, it really is the kind of thing that if you took somebody that has, let's say they have a Core i5 from 3 years ago that doesn't even have an SSD in it, and you sat them in front of this machine, for everything but gaming, I think they'd be shocked at how fast it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking at your Cinebench runs, and this thing is hanging. I mean, it turbos up to 4.5 gigahertz. It's hanging with some serious horsepower for sure. Single thread.
So, but if you look at Blender, nice. If you look at Blender, which is a longer workload than Cinebench, it sort of tapers off. But yeah, okay. Like Blender's a much longer workload than Cinebench, and again, most people aren't whacking all the cores all the time like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. How is it acoustically? Now, we know that the power supply is external, 90 watt power brick. So you do have that AC adapter on the floor. Acoustically, is it quiet enough? I mean, because that's a lot of horsepower to cool and not a lot of volume.
Yes. So for the vast majority of time, you can't even hear the thing. I didn't see a spec where the fan completely shuts off. It's on some of the other NUCs, the fan's off under 55 degrees C. I think that's the case here, but I couldn't find it officially, so I don't want to say the wrong thing. But even under load, when the fan spins up, you can hear it, but it's quieter than most laptops that I've used. So yes, it's audible, but in basically any office environment right on your desk, I don't think anybody would be put off by the noise at all. It's audible, but not loud.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's pretty interesting. And how about gaming? I noticed you ran a few things on it. You've got Middle Earth Shadow of War, 1080p, looks like about 30 frames per second. Light duty gaming, is it realistic, or is this, you know, integrated graphics, forget about it?
No. So light duty gaming is entirely possible. So it was the fastest Intel powered GPU, so fastest integrated Intel GPU in the test that I ran. So I ran 3DMark, I ran Cinebench OpenGL, VRMark, and Shadow of War. It's not a gaming machine, so I wasn't going to go crazy with the graphics test. But if you look at Cinebench, right? Not Cinebench, 3DMark, it's like a hair behind AMD Vega 8, which is in the latest gen APUs. You know, everybody raves about Vega 8 in terms of how strong it is as an integrated GPU. So it's really just a hair behind that. So for light duty gaming, casual gaming, no problem. Light duty gaming with details dialed down, no problem. Shadow of War did 30 frames per second at 1080p medium quality. So even if you crank the quality down a little bit, or even the resolution, a game like Shadow of War is playable on here. Not awesome,
yeah,
you know, but it's playable.
How much embedded DRAM on board that thing? So you've got
128 megs.
I noticed on the first page you've got the chip exposed there, those two external die on either side of the CPU, that's your eDRAM cache, right? Or do we have a one that,
one's the PCH and one's the DRAM for the setup, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the bigger chip's the PCH, right? And yeah, the biggest chip is the CPU, but quad core. Very cool. The Intel NUC, Bean Canyon NUC. Any other bit of advice? I noticed it's got an SD card reader. It's got eSATA as well as standard SATA.
No eSATA.
Excuse me, not eSATA.
Thunderbolt 3.
USB is what I was thinking about. There's a USB with PowerShare. Excuse me, not eSATA. You're right. So and then Thunderbolt 3. So yeah, you pretty much got it all. You can even connect external storage over Thunderbolt, or you know, display expansion certainly as well. HDMI, no display port. I don't know if that's a big deal.
No display port, but Thunderbolt 3 is essentially display port. So
right. Yeah, over that connection. Interesting stuff. The Intel NUC, they've been doing these little boxes for a while now, and we wondered how long the fad would continue at Intel, how long they keep building these machines. But it has done very well for the company, and they have continued to evolve the platform such that you've got full bandwidth NVMe on board. You know, you've got all of these really full size system features and IO connectivity, such that there's almost no, with the exception of a full size discrete GPU, there's almost no compromise going on here for a standard desktop system for the mainstream user. The Hades Canyon NUC had semi discrete graphics, so integrated AMD Vega. What was that? That was a 2020 core Vega GPU on board that, right? I believe for the Hades Canyon NUC in that multi-chip module. I'm forgetting what the CPU was that Intel had. What was
that? 8809, the KB Lake G.
That's what I was trying to remember. My aging brain on a Friday. Yeah. So you've got a NUC that can game, and now you've got this, which is clearly a higher end NUC. I mean, it's content creation. You think it's doable? Is that a fair thing to expect to be able to crunch video on? I think with a fair amount of RAM and a solid NVMe drive, probably, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be like a many core full size desktop, but will be adequate. Like my wife, for example, has been, her last two systems have been NUCs. And after years of me building her systems, and she's perfectly happy. She's, you know, heavy Photoshop user. She, you know, she's not a power user, but she does way more than the average, computer user, and perfectly happy with her tiny machines. I'm hoping to talk her into this one, but man, she's got to clean all the crap off her other system first.
And then, of course, you do have the Windows licensing. So that does add it depends, right? I mean, you can find creative ways to get a Windows 10 license these days, depending on if you own some older OS licenses. But it's about $100 on average.
I mean, if you have to buy it outright, I think most people won't have to buy it. Like literally most people forget that keys, valid keys from Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 will all activate Windows 10. So if you have valid keys on any system, you know, from the last three generations, you can activate Windows 10 legit. It's not a scam. Like, because Microsoft was giving away Windows 10, you can activate with those older keys.
Yeah. Yeah. They want you on that platform, man. We know that for sure. Good stuff. Good stuff. The Intel Bean Canyon NUC. Marco took a look at that. Check out the review at hothardware.com, and you can get all the skinny there. And buy it if you like on Amazon, which always helps the cause, helps keep the lights on for Marco and me. That's important too. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to something mobile, and let's see when I kick around the Huawei Mate 20 camera chops and great battery life. There it is, the Huawei Mate 20 with its teardrop notch, which is I kind of like that design. I'm actually not that notch averse as a user. And I like the teardrop notch. It's less disruptive. 6.5 inch. In this case, this is not the Mate 20 Pro. This is the Mate 20 standard. And I think there's another Mate down below that. But the Pro is the higher end with a 40 megapixel camera. So that's the real higher end Mate. But Huawei's Mate 20, and this is so the 6.5-inch display, IPS display. The Mate 20 Pro has an OLED display. This is a 2244 by 1080p display, 381 pixel, pixels per inch pixel density. And it has a triple rear camera with Leica lens. So you've got a 12 megapixel shooter, which is back there. It's a wide angle, a standard angle with f1.8 aperture, and a 16 megapixel ultra wide angle, and then an 8 megapixel telephoto camera with f2.4 aperture. And then the front has a 24 megapixel front facing selfie cam. So this thing is dialed with cameras. Kirin 980 processor, which is a, I believe that's an octal core. Yes, it's an octal core with two performance cores, two efficiency cores, and four more Cortex-A55 sort of mid-range performance cores. And this thing just, it's actually a well-put-together machine. You're looking at all the gory details of the specs. I don't know if you can cut back to the camera, to the phone itself, John, but well-specced, 4 gig of RAM, 128 gig of storage, or 6 gig of RAM with 128 gig of storage to up to 256 gigs of storage on board. So 4 or 6 gig of RAM with up to 256 gigs of storage. So really well decked out. Nice looking phone. Comes in black, midnight blue, and twilight is another color, which is kind of like a semi-purple color. Kind of that's the color we looked at, actually. And a 4,000 milliamp hour battery. So it's got a lot going on. Android 9 Pie, really sort of just, you know, a checkbox list of, you know, flagship phone features. The only thing is it's not the Pro. It doesn't have that OLED display and it doesn't have that higher end camera. But we found that the camera on this phone actually performed really well. It's got AI on board, you know, or I should really say what is, you know, machine learning of environment so that the camera automatically adjusts in auto mode to best exposure, best lighting, color balance, all that good stuff. They call it AI. It's a lot of onboard real-time processing to help pre-process before shooting, you know, setting up the scene. And it did a really nice job, John. I don't know if you can get to the camera page. That's down in the, that's actually page 3. So if you hit page 3, you can see some of the samples we took there. Really good low light shots. Some really good, bokeh effects with its portrait mode. And so it actually held up pretty well. And what was probably one of the most impressive things about it, there's the camera app right there. You're looking at, you know, the different modes. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see some samples. There's our editor, Chris, doing his thing, indoor and outdoor. Indoor shots were a little bit tricky with color. You can see there's some washed out there with AI disabled. But when you enable it, it sets it up a little bit different, changes the color a little bit, and you get some real nice crisp shots. But you know, it's an interesting device. It performed reasonably well in the benchmarks. It's not a serious benchmark buster by any stretch. It's not going to compete right up there with the Snapdragon 845 for things like gaming. When you talk about the CPU side of things, it does very well. That Kirin 980 does well in things like Geekbench. It did reasonably well in our future PC Mock for Android test and Antutu. It took nearly the top spot. Gaming is where on the GPU side you'll see others like again Snapdragon 845 powered Android phones perform a little bit better. But really, you know, for all intents and purposes, performance is right there. Battery life was, you know, actually it took the top spot versus some of our larger flagship phones. So even more than a Galaxy Note 9, it just edged out the Galaxy Note 9 at like 815 minutes of uptime in our PC Mark Work 2.0 battery test. So really a well-rounded phone for not crazy amounts of money. You know, in these days when phones are getting to be $1,000 or so, this thing comes in at $650 or so. However, it is unlocked and unwarrantied here in the US. because it is not officially a U.S. phone. And you have, of course, the U.S. government's issues with Huawei and privacy, so, or security, I should say, or all the above. So some caveats there. But Marco, what did you think about this device? You know, Huawei has certainly impressed. They are they the largest cell phone manufacturer in the world at this point? Did they just edge out Apple? I think they did.
I think they're number two because they have a huge presence in China. I'm not certain. I think number two.
Pretty close. Yeah, pretty close. They're neck and neck. But what are your thoughts on this guy?
So it's funny. Like I dig the phone, dig the specs. The performance looks good. Battery life is awesome. Anecdotally, you know, taking trips for the site and hanging out with other analysts and tech press, I'm surprised. I shouldn't say I'm surprised. It's eye-opening how many people carry around Huawei phones and love them, because they have such an uphill battle here in the U.S. You don't realize how popular the devices are. And, you know, for the money, that's a killer phone for $645. Plenty of RAM, plenty of storage, great camera, flexibility, nice screen, awesome battery life. I mean, it kind of ticks all the boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, and they're built well too. Like if you've ever, you know, if you got your hands on this one, and I've seen, I actually seen the Mate 20 Pro in person. That's a beautiful OLED display, and that, yeah, I mean, design chops, you know, always got that going too. And so it's really a very well set up phone. It does not. I'm trying to think. Does it have? I have to look at this. Does it have the headphone jack? Did they maintain that? I think they did on this, but. Yeah, just a well-built phone with a killer camera and great battery life. And we really, you know, we were impressed. And so really, does for the average U.S. consumer, and let's face it, that's our largest audience at hothardware.com, would you feel comfortable recommending a Huawei phone to folks when something like this, unfortunately, yeah, you can buy it unlocked. You can find it on Amazon for that price. But you're out of warranty and it's, you know, technically not supported here in the U.S. Is that a big deal, you think?
You know, tough call. With the amount of noise that U.S. government and various agencies have made or leveraged against Huawei, you would think there'd be some specific allegation. And you'd think like the open source community or the security community would have identified something and said, wow, look what this company's doing. And it just hasn't happened. So I don't know if it's 100% politically motivated, if there's really a concern. I don't have a good answer. Now, I would say I'd probably take a shot at that price. If I had to, you know, if I broke my phone tomorrow and I needed to buy another phone, I'm not dropping $1,200 on a phone. And I want the best bang for the buck. So I personally would probably look at a phone like this or the OnePlus 6 as an option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, and you make a very good point there on one of my favorite devices, the OnePlus series of phones, the OnePlus 6 or the 6T. I'm a OnePlus fan. I actually use the OnePlus 6 as my daily driver. That's a great device. Also lower cost. I think if I'm looking at the camera performance on this on the Mate 20, I think may have an edge there, because OnePlus, they're working on their camera performance, but that's always been sort of a soft spot, frankly, with OnePlus. For me, the camera's been plenty good enough. I haven't felt like I've been missing out with the camera, but on the OnePlus. But I think the Mate series, especially the Mate 20 Pro, with its higher end camera, higher resolution sensor, would have an edge. Has the same optics in the Mate 20, which is again that Leica lens that, you know, that does really well. So yeah, it's an interesting option. I think what's great is there are still reasonable lower cost options, and we're going to get into a Mobile World Congress preview later on in the cast here. But you know, and there's going to be some, you know, $1,000 phones to be announced at Mobile World Congress for sure. But it's nice to still have $500 and $600 options. If you have to buy one, you know, and you don't want to be on contract with the carrier, which I haven't been for years. I know you probably haven't either, Marco. If you got to buy one, you know, off contract, you know, not subsidized for that $30 or $40 a month, you know, you're going to pay for a handset. it's good to have, you know, $500 and $600 phones still. I mean, $1,000 phone is, that's a big, I mean, you can buy a lot of computer, you know, a nice desktop system for $1,000. So, I don't know. You got to justify it, right? Chris actually gives us a little point of clarification. Thank you, Chris. He says, Huawei is actually number two behind Samsung. Yes, thank you. And ahead of Apple as of summer 2018. Boy, Apple, how far they have fallen. They're really playing catch up at this point. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. That last round of iPhones just a little too expensive, and I think the battery replacement program bit them in the rear a little bit there, right?
Yeah, it's so funny. Replacing the battery made the phone fast again. That's not shady at all.
No. We won't pick on them too much. Sophie, clearly in the background there, thought that
Sorry. I have my door closed, but she's definitely enjoying the movie that they're watching.
You know, there's nothing wrong with child laughter and having fun and enjoying themselves. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Yeah. All right, well let's move on. Let's move on and talk about something that I think probably piqued your interest a little bit, Marco, because you tend to be a retro computing kind of guy. You love the Commodore and Amiga and all that happy stuff, but recently. I don't know if I would say he's a developer, but sort of a very generous fellow came up with a new bundle for Windows 95, believe it or not. You can now download and run Windows 95 version 2.0 with integrated Doom and Wolfenstein. That is our headline. And this guy, I'm trying to think, I got to look up his name. Felix Reisenberg. Reisberg, not Reisenberg. That's Breaking Bad. That's Eisenberg. Anyways, Felix Reisberg was good enough to put these packages together. Windows 95 with integrated Doom and Wolfenstein. Did you play around with this thing, Marco? And what are your thoughts about going back to what really seemed to be one of the best iterations of Windows back in the day, ever? I guess perhaps maybe not. I like Windows 10 quite a bit, but what do you think about this guy?
So I think what Felix did is really cool. I have a weird take on the retro scene that I'll get to on the end. I'll try to just burn through this quick. So this is actually a really cool release. Felix actually did a Windows. So he used an environment called Electron to create this. It's basically, it acts like an app. He had done a version one that ran Windows 95 that sort of lacked some features. I think it even lacked like audio, lacked a bunch of stuff. But it was sort of like a proof of concept to get Windows 95 running in this little app environment on other platforms. You can run it on a Mac, on Linux, whatever. So this latest version 2 fixes a bunch of issues from the first release and adds those games that you mentioned. So it's a more complete package, and you can do stuff with it, you know, right out of the box, so to speak. So really cool way to experience some of these classic games in the an authentic Windows 95 environment, even if you're not running a Windows PC. You can run it on other machines. Brandon, our guy who manages the news desk, tested it out on a Mac. Basically worked, couldn't get stuff like networking to function. But yeah, you know, you run it, you have Win95 with Netscape Navigator. So you want to see how useless the web would be, you know, like, well, I guess he didn't get networking functioning, but yeah, you basically won't be able to do much online, but, you know, faithfully able to see how we hobbled around the web, you know, 15 years ago, however long ago it was. So pretty cool little pack available for free. You can grab it on GitHub. But yeah, that's it. It's a kind of a cool little suite, so to speak.
Yeah, a little project. You also get integrated A10 Tank Killer and Grand Prix Circuit installed. So some classic gaming action there. A10 Tank Killer.
Was popular, man. That was a popular game back in the day.
A10 Warthog, yeah. Tank Buster. That was awesome. Yeah, no, it's cool. And then Brandon actually, Brandon Hill, he wrote it up for us, that news post. He's our news desk managing editor. And he had it running. You can see he's got it running on his Mac. It's in a Mac window as an app, and he's playing Doom on his Mac with Windows. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, it's not, you know, you're not going to go rule the world with this setup for any, you know, or anything like that, but it's kind of cool, a little fun to play with. And it's how much of a download is it? How many megs? It's probably not a lot.
Oh, I don't know, but it can't be very big at all. Those games were on single floppies. Maybe I can go check GitHub right now and tell you. So, yeah, yes. It's let's see, how big is it?
Just 280 megs.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yep, 282 for the big one. So funny.
That's worth the download to check it out, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny though. Like I spend way too much time in the retro computing groups on Facebook. I love the retro stuff on YouTube. I totally get the retro stuff for Amigas, Commodores, you know, defunct platforms that are gone. I don't get the Windows retro experience. Like some of these people are spending big coin on 486s and these old, you know, Socket 7 motherboards. And that I don't get because you can just emulate that. I mean, you can not even emulate it. You can just run a VM with those old OSs on a modern system. You know, it's technically native. You're just running it in a virtual machine.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm weird like that. I'm not nostalgic for older versions of Windows. I think Windows 10 is the best version of Windows yet. I don't get the hate for Windows 10 unless you're just the privacy stuff. Yeah, but
yeah,
we're out there, man. Between digital assistants and cell phones and our smart TVs and just having credit cards, your info's out there. And you can disable what you can disable in 10. And in terms of performance and just usability, I think Windows 10 is great. But if you want to play Windows 95, you can.
Yeah, you know, I would have to agree with you on the privacy angle. I think there's, you know, there's a lot of paranoia with respect to Microsoft just because of the whole telemetry thing back in the day when Windows 10 first came out and how it was monitoring every keystroke and all that good stuff. I'm sorry, but Google monitors your every move too. You're on Amazon, you know, Amazon just went and who did they just go and buy? They bought a networking company, Eero, right? Am I getting that name right?
Anyways. I don't know how to pronounce it, but yeah, the guys that like kind of pioneered network mesh for consumer
mesh. Area. Yeah. So Amazon, you know, they obviously, you know, they've got their smart devices, the Echoes and all that good stuff. And now they want to connect with networking. And it's like, you know, they're getting their hooks in on your data too, only they want to put it in at the router so that they can really snoop your data. It's like everybody wants a piece of your data. And if you want to be really secure, disconnect from the internet. That's about all you could do.
Yeah, move into a cabin with no data connection anywhere.
Yeah. No, it's a brave new world. I think security is the new frontier, for sure. People that learn how to provide value and solutions in security and securing the net and securing your data, so that we have fewer breaches, they're going to make big bucks. So. If you're a budding engineer, software or whatever, silicon engineer, maybe, heed my words. Learn the security realm. You'll make big bucks. All right. So let's move on. Let's move on to stay in the mobile vein. Go back to the mobile vein, I should say. We talked the May 20. Let's talk about Mobile World Congress, what we expect to see in the week ahead. There's lots going on. I'm actually flying out to San Francisco next week to go see the Galaxy Unpacked event in San Francisco, the launch event. I believe that's the 20th. But there you have it. We are expecting to see something from Samsung, the next Galaxy, as it were. And we had a little bit up today on what to expect from Galaxy Unpacked, from the Galaxy S10 to the Galaxy F. There's a lot going on for Samsung next week. And, you know, frankly, Samsung, you know, we're not talking out of school here. We haven't been briefed yet, so we're not on NDA, but there's been a lot of leaks, and even Samsung has teased what to expect from its devices. It's had the number 10 in its advertisements. There you have leaked renders of the Galaxy S10. I think that may be the Plus, the larger device. So we're expecting a Galaxy S10, and they've advertised the 10. They've advertised a folding device as well, where, you know, they had a video out and they even teased a folding device that they held up at one of the recent events. And more leaks have come out today where we're now expecting something new in the Galaxy Watch realm. The Galaxy Watch Active was discovered today by, I want to say that was something leaked in a driver update or something like that. I don't know what tipped it. I'm trying to think where that leak stemmed from, but it was an oops by Samsung as well. Galaxy Fit and Fit E, which looks to be some sort of fitness band tracker, and then Galaxy Buds, which are wireless buds, wireless earbuds for Galaxy devices. So interesting stuff. There's some great accessories coming potentially, but that's kind of what we're seeing, what we're getting for in the leak and rumor mill. Those look like pretty darn defined products. So I don't think mocked or faked necessarily, but it's hard to sort of, you know, you can't buy into it until you see it completely. You know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but you know, that's could be what's coming on the accessory side. But from a device side, Galaxy S10 is expected to be a larger 6.1 inch device for the S10 standard. 6.4 is the plus, Galaxy S10 plus, 6.4 inch display there. And then a Galaxy S10e has been rumored, 5.8 inch. So you've got three Galaxy devices. We're also hearing about the Galaxy F, or what people are calling the Galaxy S, because Samsung has been teasing the foldable device as well. So we're expecting a foldable device. Actually got rumors earlier on this month that it may be a gaming targeted device. Don't know if there's any fact or fiction there going on, but there's a lot of speculation with Samsung, Marco. What are you thinking? The Galaxy F, they're saying, is 7.3 inches and folds, expected to wield a secondary 4.5 inch display panel on the outside. I mean, just wild. What are your thoughts about what Samsung's got to offer? And I know we can talk about what LG's teasing too.
Yeah. So on the Galaxy S side, you know, Qualcomm has disclosed what makes the 855 tick. So yep. I think there's expectations in terms of performance. We know the S10 is their flagship, flagship handset. So expect updated screen, high performance, more storage, yada, 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 all that good stuff. So everything that's kind of been leaked, I believe. And, you know, Samsung, I think they had, I want to remember the wording on a tweet that went out last week, something like basically something will be unfolding next week. So the folding phone announcement is going to come. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to be a product that's on the way shortly or if it's more here's what's coming. I really don't know. I'm not sure. Folding to me is a single display, you know, where that folds. A phone that's got two screens is really not anything new. We've had that. And it's never taken off. So I'd be less excited about that. I'm actually not that excited for folding phones unless it means I can fold it tiny into my pocket. I don't know. That's me.
Yeah.
I never grabbed my phone and said, I wish I could fold this, you know?
No, I've been happy with, you know, frankly, I know you like really big devices as well.
I like, you know, big. Like,
yeah. Well, you're a Note fan too, right? The Note 9 and the Note 8. Yeah, you do like them big, but yeah, I don't. Once you get above, I have a 6.28 inch, you know, roughly 6.3 inch, OnePlus 6. And once you get above that 6.25 kind of range, I think 6.4, I mean, Samsung does a really good job with keeping bezels thin. So that thing's going to be super space optimized, you know, if it is 6.4, which again, these are leaks and rumors at this point. There's nothing been confirmed, but that, I don't know if that'll feel too big or not, but yeah, I don't know that I need more than that in the palm of my hand. And I don't know what the use case would be. I think gaming actually makes sense for a use case. You could see gamers making use of a a foldable device. That would make sense to me. In there, you've also got additional thermal real estate to add more horsepower, crank up a chip, what have you. Snapdragon 855 is supposed to offer some serious, by the way, performance expectations. Qualcomm has gone out and introduced that. We haven't seen too much in the way of official benchmarks. There were some prototype systems that were run, but not, retail ready devices. We haven't seen those yet. And this will, inevitably be the first iteration of retail ready devices or retail devices with Snapdragon 855. So I'm looking forward to that. We're expecting like a 30% lift in gaming performance, I think, as well as a sizable lift. I want to say it's 20 to 30% in the CPU side as well, right? With Snapdragon 855. Is that right, Marco? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember the exact uplift. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. There's multiple areas of performance lift in this chip, especially with respect to AI. They're talking about it, some heavy duty performance gains there as well. There's actually onboard Tensor cores, so. This is expected to be a really nice SoC. 5G, of course, we should talk a little bit about that. We are expecting to see some of the first 5G capable phones out there. I think Samsung's probably going to step out with something that's, 5G capable, 5G ready. Whether or not the average end user is able to take advantage of that now, I think it remains to be seen. Oh, there's a doggy barking. Is Mac having a good time?
It's probably my wife getting home.
And Mac greeting her for the day. Yeah, no. So should consumers for Mobile World Congress and some of the unveils that are going on there in Barcelona, should we be all that jazzed about 5G right away?
Not right away. No, not right away. It is going to be a game changer moving forward, just having that much bandwidth, that much lower latency bandwidth wirelessly, hopefully eventually, blanketing all of the areas that we already have 4G. It's going to be pretty wild. Most people are still stuck on gigabit Ethernet and they think it's enough when it's not. Like, you're going to have smartphones that offer more bandwidth than your wired desktop. It's going to be pretty crazy.
Yeah, multi gigabit connectivity, wireless connectivity is coming, and you hit the nail on the head. What's interesting about 5G when it's deployed? The thing about the 5G rollout is we are hearing from people like Qualcomm and many of the other OEMs that the rollout for 5G will be quicker than 4G. That's what they're saying. I'm a little skeptical. I got to be honest with you. I'm a little skeptical with that, but that's the messaging we're getting. The thing with 5G is, yes, there's exponential more capacity and multiple levels of increased bandwidth, right? So multi-gig connectivity wirelessly. To do that, however, you have to have, with 5G, there's a denser deployment required, every other city block, for example, of base stations, 5G base stations to transmit this signal to have that connectivity. You need more. It's a shorter reach technology, so you need more base stations, and so that's going to take some serious capital investment. But yeah, you're talking about the kind of bandwidth and network performance for the average consumer that is whole. It's a game changer. So you're talking about new levels of service capable over 5G that you wouldn't normally have wirelessly, where your wireless carriers are now going to be competing with, the Comcast and the cable operators who have enjoyed the monopoly on your home internet connection, your broadband connection at home for so long, whether it be Fios or cable or whatever. Now these guys are going to eventually have, once it's deployed again, once that rollout happens, it'll be ubiquitous enough and high bandwidth enough that wireless, you're connected everywhere you go wirelessly. That'd be a beautiful thing. I can't wait for that, actually, Marco.
I mean, we're basically connected wherever we go wirelessly as well, but we're talking high bandwidth connections, right? Greater than the gigabit wired connection on your PC right now. So
you're not bandwidth constrained anywhere you go, And right. I mean, there's sometimes when even the home network, when there's enough users on it, whether you talk Wi-Fi or what have you, or even wired, it kind of lags, right? And you hit a capacity limit. With 5G, theoretically, at its full inception, or its full, I should say, implementation, that's not going to be much of an issue anymore.
So. Yeah, I wonder with those comments that the 5G rollout's going to be faster. I wonder if they're kind of couching it and it's going to be true 5G or like the pseudo 5G where the 4G network has been upgraded where it's faster than it was, but you're not the full 5G. You know, there's gray area, unfortunately, with all these carriers. They like to play games, especially AT&T. So, I think we're a couple of years off from the wow moments with 5G, but it's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're probably about right. A couple of years from now, we'll be talking about 5G almost everywhere, maybe, but maybe we're wrong. Yeah, like, I mean, we're seeing it in the slide next.
There's supposed to be a faster rollout. Next gen. Yeah. There's next gen flagship phones coming out that will be announced at MWC that are not 5G. So keep that in mind too.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to something else from that we can expect at Mobile World Congress. Marco, you know a little bit about this guy. I don't know. Well, let's talk about LG. Let's talk about the LG G8, which has been teased by LG too now. So we can say some things. We can't say that this is for sure the render, though. I will say that these are just leaked renders. That's a leak. Marco has been briefed. So we have to be careful what Marco says and what we say. But there have been some bits of information disclosed. So what can we say about this, Marco?
I don't know what I'm allowed to say, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
So if you've seen the LG G8 ThinQ leaks, you have a good idea what's in it. But you know what? If you look at the past, okay, if you look at what LG has done with previous flagships versus competitors like Samsung, you kind of know what path they're going to take. And the LG G8 ThinQ may or may not follow that similar path, and it's probably got some features. It may have some features that other phones don't. That were in the leaks and turn out to be true, but I really don't know how much I'm allowed to say right now.
I don't want to get
anybody in trouble. So,
Well, there's a couple of things that have been disclosed about this device. One is, and this was disclosed by LG, and we already know the name. It's LG G8 ThinQ, right? Or Think. I say ThinQ. It's ThinQ. Anyways, so there's going to be a front-facing camera, selfie cam, that is effort with Infineon, a Real 3 time-of-flight image sensor, TOF. And what that's supposed to do is something with 3D scanning and 3D point mapping, so that the image sensor can better, I believe, see your selfie shot and, you know, better adapt to that image recognition and all that good stuff. So there's lots of technology coming with the camera that's interesting. We'll have to see for VR and AR applications. There's obviously, when you talk about 3D point scanning and mapping, that those types of applications as well, AR and VR, are, you know, disposed to that or use that sort of technology. I don't know if you got any more on that. I don't think you can talk much more on that, but that's, you saw something about that, right?
got a lot more on that. What else? So LG will use that technology for more than just selfies. Having an accurate 3D map of a face could theoretically enhance some security-related features. And it could also map other things to be used for biometric security as well, theoretically. So that's something else to look out for at MWC. LG, there is new technology coming all the way around the phone, and there will be a focus on increased security and on new ways to interact with the phones.
So that's not something that's breaking your embargo. I'm making Marco sweat here, by the way.
I just don't want, I signed an embargo for hot hardware. Right. I don't want the lawyers to come after the site.
Right. So we are being careful. We're being careful. Yeah, absolutely. So this is again, we published an article, and John, I have it in the link list, on January 23rd, where LG teases gesture control for smartphone interface. So touch, goodbye touch is what they had in this ad. And so, yes. Mm-hmm. And if you roll the video, they will show a piece of paper and, they're waving their hand in front of it, and MWC 2019 LG Premier. There it is. Thank you, John. And they're swiping this way and that way, and words are coming up on the page. So yes, we're talking about some sort of touchless gesture control or user interface going on in this device as well. So that much we know. We also know something else that they teased, Marco. They teased the audio solution, right? So there's something special about the display. And again, we have to be careful how much we say, but what they did say was, there was a release. Hang on, I got to get to it if I can find it. Yeah, thank you. So there is some sort of audio amplification via the OLED display. They actually use the OLED display as a speaker to drive acoustics. Right? Is that accurate, Marco?
So that release was an accurate release. Yes, it was. LG did release that release and explain that technology. So that's not new tech. LG has had their, let me get the name right. I think it's called Crystal Sound OLED, something along those lines, in their televisions, where the piezo element is attached to the display and sound is emitted through the display. There's no need for any kind of ventilation holes or hole for a speaker. They're basically announcing that tech is coming to some smartphones. Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty cool stuff. It's interesting to see how the different manufacturers innovate, what they focus on. And LG has always done stuff with acoustics. I've always enjoyed LG's implementation of something that sounds frankly gimmicky, but I've always enjoyed it, and it wasn't gimmicky. It's the real deal, and that's their quad hi-fi DAC, or hi-fi quad DAC, however they call it. But it's a quad digital to analog converter that actually enhances the sound processing in the device. I believe it's LG V30, the V40, the LG G7 ThinQ, I believe, has it as well. There's multiple models. They've carried this over, this DAC, and it makes a difference. You plug in your headphones. It's specifically for wired, but it's for your headphones, and you can actually hear the difference. There's a larger spatialization. There's better frequency response. It's notable, with especially as long as you have quality source material. So yeah, they do really well with audio, and they've got some interesting tricks that they pull out that the others don't. And Samsung's always done great with displays. They do amazing stuff with displays. Gotta love that AMOLED. And good stuff. Chris says he's crying on 100 megabits per second. I don't know if that sounds so bad. You can get a 100 meg download. You're not doing too bad. And then Raymond Jeffrey says, bring on the game streaming. Amen, brother. Right?
Absolutely.
with the 5G. So we should wrap up pretty soon, but we're expecting some other stuff from Mobile World Congress. We're expecting Microsoft. They teased what seemed to be the next generation HoloLens, right? The HoloLens 2, we are calling it. They teased this, really, this guy by the name of Alex Kipman, who is a Microsoft technical fellow for AI perception and mixed reality applications in the cloud, teased this new, he teased the video and this new concept in AR and VR. And we are assuming that Microsoft is going to step out with the next generation HoloLens, mixed reality, augmented reality headset, eye gear, what have you. What do you know about that? Anything, Marco? Or are we expecting anything big there? February 24th is the expected launch or announcement date, I should say.
So in using the original HoloLens, there was obvious areas that needed improvement, and there has been huge advances in the SoCs that power this thing. So yeah. Although no specifics on the second gen HoloLens, I fully expect something like that to be coming down the pipe. If, you know, Microsoft is big on pushing this platform for the future and having people develop the, you know, mixed reality apps for their platform. And to do that, they need to continue developing HoloLens. So yeah, I buy this rumor that that's happening.
And you know, it makes sense too, that it's happening in concert with Mobile World Congress, because if you think about 5G and the bandwidth that's available, the multi-gig bandwidth when that network is fully realized, and you think about the applications AR and VR and how bandwidth intensive they are, being able to tap the cloud for compute processing with that multi-gig bandwidth wirelessly has huge potential in AR and VR, right? Could be really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So you're talking 4 and 8K, you know, 90 hertz wireless, man, to your headset. Now you're talking immersion, no tether. Say no to the tether, right?
Absolutely. Get rid of that wire and get better screens closer to your eyes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You get rid of the screen door and get rid of the wires. Good stuff. Well, we should probably wrap, Marco. I think we're just about here to the bottom of the hour, and we've covered all our bases. Lots to talk about next week. Certainly coming from Samsung and the rest of the announcements from Mobile World Congress. We'll have to get back to we're going to miss that Captain Marvel headline that we were supposed to talk about, Marco. I'm sorry. We ate up all the time on that. You forgive us?
I do. You know, I'm a huge Marvel junkie. Captain Marvel comes out in a couple of weeks. It kind of kicks off phase 4 of the MCU. Lots of cool stuff. And they you know, launched a really retro looking site for the movie that we were going to chat about. But just come by Hot Hardware, look at the news page. There's so much more that we don't cover in the podcast on the site. And I'm talking literally over the course of a week, hundreds of articles over the news and everything. So yeah, come by the site, check out all the good stuff that we can't talk about on the podcast. Like and subscribe here, hit the notification bell because we want more subscribers. We want to interact with more of you, and yeah, all that good stuff.
Wow, you did it all for me. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, you can find us on the web at hothardware.com. You can find us at twitter.com/hothardware or at hothardware. We'd like you to tweet to us. Please do hit the subscribe and the reminder bell. The reminder bell's key now on YouTube so that you get the notification that we're going live. And with that, we will bid you adieu, hopefully not till the end of next week when I get back from California from Samsung Unpacked. But in the meantime, I will say, and Marco will say, I'm sure, thank you for stopping by.
Cue.